patience. I'm sure the other dean can handle things. Just a few days. The school will still be there when you get back.
You really think we can have a perfect ending? Sophie asked.
You deserve it. Anyone who says you can't isn't telling you the truth, said Rian.
Sophie took him in, then turned to Agatha. What do you think, Aggie? She asked, her green eyes twinkling as if she knew her friend had been listening all along. Agatha startled in her chair. What?
What does Agatha think about what?
Tedros asked as he sat back down. Agatha, Sophie, and Rian spun to him.
Nothing,
they said. Foxes circled the tables. The first course had arrived. After dinner, they walked through the darkest part of the forest towards Marion's arrow, the four of them together. Agatha had her arm hooked in Tedros's as Rian and Sophie cuddled on the sandy path ahead of them.
I'm going to burst out of these clothes, said Tedros with a burp.
I've never eaten so much in my life, Agatha moaned, feet shuffling lazily. Even Sophie had dessert. Sophie! She ate all three.
What do you mean, all three? All six? She ate mine, too,
Rian called out, pecking Sophie on the cheek.
I don't care if I have to do yoga in a steam room for 8 hours tomorrow and juice fast for the rest of my life,
Sophie said, wobbly-legged and food-drunk in Rian's arms. It was worth it.
And that is how a witch is felled,
Tedros whispered to Agatha. Gourmet dining. Agatha nuzzled into his chest as they watched Sophie and Rian kissing intensely.
I remember when we were like that, Agatha sighed.
What do you mean, were?
Said Tedros, sweeping her up in his arms and kissing her as he carried her.
Oh, put me down, said Agatha.
You told me to put you down when I carried you at school, and then you fainted. And Sophie turned into Satan and we almost died, said Tedros, clasping her tighter. So, request denied.
Agatha relaxed in his arms. I love you, Tedros.
I love you, Agatha.
You love me even though sometimes I try to control things too much, she said.
You love me even though sometimes I tried to shield you too much,
he said.
You love me even though I don't write you when I'm supposed to,
she said.
Well, it's not like you write Sophie either, said Tedros.
Agatha laughed.
No more snake to worry about. The woods safe again. Our allies back on our side, said Tedros, and soon we'll be king and queen, husband and wife.
We'll be as good in peace as we are in war, said Agatha.
We already are, he said,
kissing her again.
Does anyone actually know where we're going?
Rian's voice hollered. Tedros lifted his lips off Agatha's.
Oh, for God's sake, Rian, how hard is it to follow a path?
They were totally lost, it turned out, but no one seemed to care. With Tedros now whispering to Rian at the fore, and Sophie canoodling with Agatha behind them, fairy lights flickered occasionally over their heads as if to assure them they were perfectly safe, despite the fact the Emerald Forest had turned ink black, and they could hardly see each other's shadows anymore. When a silent moment finally came, it was the king who broke it.
If Sophie wants to come stay at Camelot for a few days, it's fine, said Tedros. There's my man, Rian crowed, slinging an arm around him.
Sophie and Agatha goggled at each other.
Provided she does all the wedding planning and stays locked in the dungeon, Tedros said, half joking.
Will Rian be locked in the dungeon with me? Sophie asked. The four of them burst into laughter.
Speaking of witches,
said Tedros.
Far off the side of the path, Agatha could see a small fire burning in a dugout pit. At its edge, Hester and Anadil leaned against each other, speaking softly as they roasted marshmallows and ate them off sticks. Neither noticed the group.
Should we go say hi?
Tedros whispered.
Sophie and Agatha swiveled to him at the same time. No!
Sophie smiled at Agatha knowingly.
Let them be, said Sophie. The witches weren't the only ones taking sanctuary in the forest. As the foursome went on, they spotted a tent made out of a bedsheet, surrounded by melting wax candles, lighting up two shadows inside the tent, kissing and giggling.
Now this we have to see, Sophie said. She sashayed into the thicket and pulled open the tent. Hort and Nicola tumbled out.
I told you I heard someone, Nicola said.
Hiya,
Hort beamed, seeing Agatha, Tedros and Rian first.
Robin told us you guys went to Beauty and the Feast. I wanted to take Nick there for our first date, but I don't have the money, so I made a picnic instead.
He saw Sophie, but Hort didn't look the slightest bit embarrassed or aggrieved.
You guys going to the Arrow?
We're on our way right now, said Sophie. Want to join us?
Maybe we'll meet you there, said Hort.
Sophie smiled at him.
No pressure. She turned to his new girlfriend. Oh, and Nicola, I used one of Robin's best crows to send a message to your father in Gavaldon and let him know you'll be home for Christmas.
Nicola goggled at her.
You did? Didn't tell him you'd stay home, of course, in case something compels you to come back to the woods, she said, winking at Hort.
Hort smiled at Sophie and squired Nicola into his tent.
That was so nice of her,
the group heard Nicola saying.
Nice of her indeed, said Agatha to Sophie as they retook the path. Everyone deserves to be happy in the end, said Sophie, almost singing it, including little weasels.
By the time they reached Marion's Arrow, it was well past midnight. In their dresses and suits, they traipsed through a silent fern field to get to the rusty barn, painted with a cartoon of a young Robin Hood in his green jacket, kissing Maid Marian in a white pinafore. From both of their mouths came a speech bubble that read, "Leave all ye troubles behind." A beady-eyed vulture peered down at them, perched over the door, eating what looked like a deep-fried rat.
"Password?"
he asked throatily.
"Little John,"
said Tedros.
"Proceed,"
said the vulture, sprinkling rat crumbs. Agatha pushed open the steel door. A wave of noise crashed over them as Agatha looked around a place that was half seedy pub and half country jamboree. Harried waitresses in tight sheriff's uniforms scampered about, some taking orders, others dive-bombing food to the tables, sloshing ginger beer, cheese balls, and pigskins on customers' heads. In the center of the Arrow, a throng of customers square-danced while two billy goats fiddled on their hind legs beneath a massive porcelain statue of Maid Marian,
tall as a giant, that blew bubbles if you deposited a silver piece. Everywhere Agatha looked, she glimpsed men wearing brown caps, speared with coloured feathers, each one of them flirting with someone, but she couldn't see Robin himself anywhere. Tedros came back from the bar with four tall mugs of cider.
"Look, there's Hood," he said.
Agatha spun to see the famous rogue standing atop the bar, a woman under each arm who was not Marion, and raising a mug to the crowd.
"Let us toast first to my merry men, for livening these woods and spoiling its women."
The crowd cheered, and the men in brown caps around the pub took a collective bow. Robin grinned down at Agatha, Tedros, Sophie, and Rian.
"Let us also toast to the questers of the School for Good and Evil, for fighting a battle that not many are willing to fight, and protecting kingdoms that most of you come to our forest to escape."
Another cheer.
"Let us also toast to Maid Marian, for being my true love since my own school days, and for letting me name this place in her honor, and most importantly, for being at home asleep."
Perhaps the loudest cheer of all.
"And let us toast the girl who deserves our greatest thanks on this day and always, for her courage, her kindness, and her heart. To Dot!"
"To Dot!" the crowd roared.
"To Dot!"
said Tedros, clashing mugs with Agatha, Sophie, and Rian.
"But where is Dot?"
said Sophie. Then Agatha saw her, slumped over a table in the corner.
"Oh my God," she said, breaking from Tedros and sprinting to Dot's side.
"Dot, are you okay?"
she breathed.
"Beauty and the Feast! Beauty and the Feast!"
Dot warbled, looking up, eyes red and squinty, clutching a mug.
"Where boys bring girls to give them rings."
"What is this?" Agatha demanded, snatching the mug out of her hand. "What are you drinking?"
"Chocolate milk," Dot mumbled. "What I always drink at the Arrow."
Rian rushed in and seized the mug, sniffing it. He dumped the remainder on the table and watched it curdle.
"Sleeping willow seed," he said, eyeing Agatha. "The milk was doctored."
"He got me my milk. Best date ever."
Dot slurred.
"Who's he?"
said Tedros intensely, kneeling at her side.
"Kiss me, Teddy."
Dot piffled, slumping over. Tedros hoisted her up like a child and sat her on the table. He looked into her pouty face.
"Dot, who's he?"
"My date," she said, yawning. "Went to the bathroom a few hours ago. He'll be back any second."
Tedros went white.
"The boy I saw at the restaurant."
"You thought you recognized him," said Agatha, seeing Tedros's face.
"Kay doesn't like Teddy,"
said Dot, poking at Tedros's muscles.
"Kay wanted to see Daddy's keys. Said he'd give me a kiss for each one I showed him. Look how many kisses I got."
Dot dug into her dress and thrust her keys into the air like a trophy. Dot screamed. The whole Arrow screeched to a stop. The music, the dancing, the beer. Because the key ring Dot was holding had no keys left. By the time they made it to the jail,
Blood spilled out its doors like a river. The cell door was ajar, the magic sack inside shredded to threads and scattered about the stone floor like snakes. And guarding the cell were three merry men, with eyes wide open, their hearts speared through with their own arrows. Chapter 26. Tedros. Questions of a King.
"This meeting will come to order,"
Tedros declared, standing in front of the captain's wheel of the Igraine as it flew through the pink and purple dawn sky. He looked down at the gathered crew, still in their clothes from the night before, and sitting cross-legged on the deck.
"I won't waste words. As Professor Dovey's crystal ball does not give us much time with her..."
"Indeed,"
said the Dean, from a watery bubble hovering next to Tedros's head, her office a mess in the background.
"The snake is on the loose after escaping Nottingham, and though neither he nor his skims have yet to be sighted, he will surely come for Camelot, for Excalibur, and for the King. We must protect all three. Judging from my quest map, your ship will arrive at Camelot in an hour, and we will need to be clear on the plan."
"Now, as to the details of this plan..."
Tedros cut in.
"Tedros, I think it's best if I handle..."
The King turned to the Dean.
"We may be your students, but this is my kingdom that we're about to land in. So are you leading this meeting, or am I?"
Professor Dovey pursed her lips.
"Proceed."
Tedros scanned the crew, Rian watching him intently, Sophie fixed on Rian and nuzzling his arm, Hort, Nicola, Hester, Anadil, Beatrix, Rena, Kiko, Willem, and Bogdan. The rest of the students they'd left at a clinic in Nottingham so they could recuperate from their injuries sustained at the forepoint.
"Where's Agatha?"
he heard Kiko whisper to Sophie.
"Taking care of Dot in her room,"
Sophie whispered back.
"Dot's too afraid to show her face."
"She should be,"
Hort grumbled.
"First of all, this is not Dot's fault,"
Tedros admonished the group.
"The boy named Kay of Foxwood arrived in Sherwood Forest just a few days ago, hounding Robin for a chance to join his merry men. Robin ignored Kay at first, but when Kay expressed an interest in the sheriff's daughter, Robin saw a chance to make Dot happy. He told Kay to take Dot on a date she'd remember, and then maybe he'd consider him for his men. Little did he know Kay was in league with the snake the whole time. So please, what happened last night was an accident. Be kind to Dot."
"Challenging," groused Hester. "Impossible, honestly,"
Anadil mumbled, rats grumbling too.
"As soon as we land in Camelot, we'll divide into two teams to fight the snake,"
Tedros forged on.
"One team will be with me and Agatha at Camelot Castle. The other team will be with Rian and Sophie in Camelot City."
"I told you he wouldn't let me in the castle,"
Sophie murmured to Rian. Tedros ignored her.
"My team will be responsible for securing the royal grounds. You will work with Agatha and me to fortify the towers, protect Excalibur, and lay traps for the snake's army. Rian's team will be responsible for helping my mother and our ever and never allies to recruit an army to fight the snakes. Professor Dovey has been in touch with Guinevere."
Tedros's face changed. He looked up at the Dean in her bubble.
"And she's, aware of everything that happened last night?"
Professor Dovey paused.
"Yes, she is."
Tedros swallowed, lost in thought. The good Dean quickly took over. Ever since the Forepoint, Guinevere has led Camelot's allies in building a unified army of good and evil. Recruitment is currently taking place in Maker's Market, the main thoroughfare of Camelot City. Rian's team will join this effort and conduct loyalty tests to ensure none of the Snake's allies make it into our ranks, like Kay of Foxwood did.
Kay's name snapped Tedros out of his daze. He glanced at the Dean, thankful she'd stepped in, his stomach still queasy at the thought of his mother learning that Lance was dead. Yet, as he studied Dovey closer, the Dean looked haggard, as if she hadn't been sleeping.
Those working on Rian's team must be cautious, for the Snake's minions may have already seeped into Camelot City,
the good Dean was saying, stifling a cough.
But before the King assigns you to your teams, I have a few questions for our new knight.
Her eyes locked on Rian.
At your service, Professor Dovey,
said the copper-haired boy, immediately rising to his feet.
What kingdom are you from, Rian?
She asked.
Foxwood.
Your parents' names?
Levia and Rosamond. My father is deceased.
Siblings?
Two younger brothers, Stad and Gilderoy.
Address?
62 Stropshire Lane in Foxwood.
Thank you,
said Professor Dovey, scribbling this all down before looking up at him.
You see, I'm afraid there is no record of a Rian in our files for prospective students to either the School for Good or the School for Evil.
Perhaps I did not qualify to be a prospective student then, said Rian.
All children in the woods and woods beyond, between the ages of 12 and 15, qualify to be prospective students, and thus have a file at the school,
Professor Dovey clipped.
Then it must be an oversight, surely,
said Rian, scratching his stubble.
I will be 17 next month. I would have been in Tedros's class.
If it is an oversight, then why is your name on my quest map?
The good Dean pressed.
Why is your name recognized by the Storian? Because the Storian made a mistake by not including him in our class and now is atoning for it,
Sophie snapped, standing up next to her knight.
I understand your reservations, Professor Dovey. I would have the same ones,
said Rian, his attention still on the Dean.
I've come to serve Camelot, to protect its king. I cannot speak to the mysteries of the Storian or the admissions process at your school. But if you have doubts about my loyalty, then I will return to Foxwood at once. No one has doubts about your loyalty,
said Tedros, glaring at Dovey.
Doubts about your loyalty? No, said the Dean. In reporting this fairy tale as it unfolds, the Storian has showed me what kind of knight you are, Rian. You've saved Tedros's life. You've saved all my students' lives, along with numerous kingdoms under threat, from Foxwood to Mahadeva to Nottingham. Your loyalty to Tedros, to his friends, and to good is unquestioned. What I question is why this loyalty has not come to my attention before now. But perhaps that is something that only the Storian and our previous schoolmaster have the answers to, and, unfortunately, neither is capable of giving them. One last question, however.
She peered into Rian's eyes.
About your intentions towards Sophie.
Oh, for God's sake, Clarissa!
Sophie scorched.
Let me answer,
Rian said firmly.
Go on, Professor.
Professor Dovey gave him a keen once-over.
Do you find it strange for a knight of good to take a dean of evil as his lady?
No more strange than a princess of good like Agatha to have a dean of evil like Sophie as her best friend. Or a dean of good like you to have had a dean of evil like Lady Lesso as your best friend,
Rian answered.
Good and evil are no longer as irreconcilable in our world as they once were, something we have to give Sophie quite a bit of credit for. But to be perfectly honest, I wouldn't have wanted the Sophie that came to your school her first year. That Sophie was evil in the most self-serving way. There was little to attract someone like me who wants to do good in this world. But I don't see that Sophie anymore. Her soul may still skew toward evil, but now her evil serves the greater good. It's what I most admire about her. She can change people's minds. She knows how to lead. I think we can all agree on that, Professor. Even more, I think we can all say that she deserves to find real love. Wouldn't you?
Sophie's eyes had turned to stars. The Dean of Good smiled warmly.
I look forward to meeting you in person, Sir Rian, she said, before looking at the king. Tedros, I leave it to you to divide the teams.
As Rian and Sophie sat, Hort leaned over to Nicola.
Watch, Tedros won't pick me for his team because he thinks I'm a loser.
Well, at least we'll be together then, because he doesn't even know my name,
said Nicola.
On my team, it's Agatha, Hort, Nicola, Kiko, Bogdan, and Willem, said Tedros. On Rian's team, it's Sophie, Hester, Anadil, Dot, Beatrix, and Rena.
Hort and Nicola blinked, surprised.
Any questions?
Tedros asked.
Why are all the boys on your team? Said Rena.
Because Rian is all the man a team needs, Sophie vamped.
Next question, said Tedros, staring Sophie down.
How big is the snake's army? Said Beatrix.
We don't know, said Tedros, but judging from the chaos he caused across the woods and his ability to pay for loyalty, we can expect a sizable force.
Can Merlin help us like he did against Rafal and his zombies?
Asked Kiko.
Merlin is missing,
said Professor Dovey gravely.
All I can hope right now is that he is still alive.
Tedros tensed, sensing the genuine fear in the dean's face.
You say we have to build an army, but do the people even want to fight for Tedros?
Beatrix asked, raising her hand. From the news we read, it doesn't seem like you have much support from other kingdoms after you left them to deal with the snake on their own. Or from the people of Camelot, for that matter.
Rian might have saved half the woods single-handedly, but are those people going to rally behind you?
Tedros went bright red.
Look. Tedros is the king,
Rian lashed, spinning to Beatrix.
The king of the woods' greatest kingdom. And it is our duty to show the people of Camelot and beyond what loyalty to the king looks like. Anyone unable to fulfill that duty is welcome to jump off the boat right now.
Beatrix shirked under his hot blue-green eyes.
Sheesh. Just asking, she muttered.
Tedros gave Rian a grateful nod.
Any other questions?
No one spoke.
Meeting dismissed, said Tedros. Get yourself something to eat or go down for a nap, because as soon as we land, our work begins. He looked up at the Dean, who was already starting to fade.
When can you make it to Camelot, Professor?
As soon as I can, the Dean said vaguely.
Her bubble vanished while the crew leapt to their feet and headed towards the galley. Tedros saw Nicola walking with Rian.
Sophie was asking whether you have any psycho ex-girlfriends from school she should worry about, said Nicola.
Given I went to a school for boys, psycho ex-girlfriends aren't a problem, Rian laughed. Anything else she's concerned about?
Just that you're too good to be true. Surely there's something wrong with you.
I bite my nails, snore if I eat too close to bedtime, have a birthmark on my bum, and can be a bit temperamental.
Real deal breakers, said Nicola, smirking.
Tedros made a face. Last he'd heard, Sophie and Nicola were barely friends, and now Sophie was sending her to check up on Rian.
Teddy?
Tedros turned to see Sophie next to him.
I didn't mean to suggest you aren't as good or as manly as Rian, she said. I was just being stupid.
I know, Sophie.
She touched his shoulder.
Will you be okay?
The way she left her hand there, Tedros knew this had nothing to do with what she'd said about Rian, and everything to do with his having to face his mother soon.
I have to be,
he said.
I know you and I have had our issues, but I'm here for you, said Sophie, quiet and heartfelt. Please know I mean that. Their eyes met, and for a moment Tedros forgot everything that had happened between them.
He cleared his throat.
I better go check on Agatha,
he said, heading towards the galley. Tedros paused.
Sophie?
He turned to her.
Rian's my knight. He saved our quests. He saved ever and never kingdoms from the snake. You don't have to hunt for flaws or dig up dirt on him,
he said.
Sophie stared at him quizzically. I know that, she said. Since when do you give me love advice?
Tedros smiled.
Since I started believing in perfect endings.
Then he hustled inside, leaving Sophie wide-eyed behind him. By the time Tedros took a bath and had his turn at the enchanted pot, he asked it for meatloaf and broccoli, and it had given him pancakes instead, the Igraine was starting its descent towards Camelot. Hair wet, mouth full, he knocked on Dot's door. Agatha peeked out.
I'll meet you on deck in a minute, she whispered.
Starboard deck, where we can be alone,
said Tedros. Agatha nodded and closed the door. Tedros could hear Dot's muffled wails.
It's not just that I let the snake loose, or that everyone thinks I'm horrible, or that if anything happens to Tedros, it'll be my fault. The worst part is, I'll never kiss a boy again!
Yes, you will, said Agatha's voice. You'll get over this.
That's not what I mean. I mean, what other boy will ever kiss me? Kay was my first kiss, and he only kissed me because he wanted to get my keys.
Dot, love is more than finding a boy to kiss.
You only say that 'cause you get to kiss Tedros all day long.
And we still have our problems, like everyone else, said Agatha patiently. But if it'll make you feel better, you're welcome to kiss Tedros as much as you like. Tedros sighed. As he waited in the starboard corridor, elbows on a railing, he watched the sky turn grey, dark clouds spiraling around the ship. Tedros tried to steel himself, preparing for the war ahead, but he could feel a current of nausea underneath his forced calm. Everything about the snake terrified him. His ruthlessness, his coldness, the way he'd slashed Lance without mercy. But it was more than that. Rafal was evil, but evil in a way that Tedros understood. Rafal wanted Sophie. Rafal wanted a love so evil it would destroy good forever. But what did this snake want? To rule Camelot? Why? Is that what he was really after? Or was the snake after something more? What scared Tedros the most was that he still didn't know the answer. The ship broke through a wall of clouds, giving him his first view of Camelot City. The king's eyes bulged. Massive lines of people streamed through Maker's Market. It looked like some kind of holiday parade, with men, women, children, and Mogriffs packing every street. But as Tedros tracked the lines, he saw where they led. The gates of Camelot Park, where huge signs flashed, "Army Recruitment Evers" and "Army Recruitment Nevers." The moment the crowd caught sight of the Igraine above, they let out a roaring cheer as the ship zipped past the city and out over the savage sea, curving back around towards Camelot Castle and the royal docks. "Further proof that no one should ever listen to Beatrix," said a comforting voice. Agatha nestled up to him. "Because from what I just saw, the people are certainly on your side."
"In times of crisis, the woods needs a leader," said Tedros. "Maybe they finally realized that no matter how many mistakes I make, I will always be there to protect them and fight for them and put my life on the line for them, just like my father."
"Or they're afraid the snake's going to kill them and you're their only hope," smiled Agatha.
"That too," said Tedros.
"Though according to the snake, he's actually the lion and you're the snake," said Agatha.
"What?"
"When he captured us in Jaunt Jolie, he had a storian of his own, a fake storian, that tells the fairy tales from his point of view. And in his version of the story, he's the lion and rightful king, and you're the usurping snake. He claims all of this will only end when everything we think is true is proven untrue." Tedros thought about this.
"So, when lies become truth, and truth becomes lies?"
"Which is impossible, because the woods knows this snake now. They will never confuse him for a lion," said Agatha. "He's the villain of this story, and you're their hero. That's why they're cheering for you."
"And it's why I cannot let them down," said Tedros.
He held her tightly as the castle came into view, a light rain starting to fall.
"Dot doing okay?"
he asked.
"Or do I need to kiss her back to her senses?"
"I was hoping you'd overhear that. She'll be fine. By the time I left, she was turning her tears to chocolate and eating them."
"Gross."
The ship floated down in front of the castle. Tedros spotted Excalibur in the Blue Tower balcony, now guarded by 5 men and also sealed off in a huge, thick glass lockbox. Clearly his mother was taking no chances. The moment the Igraine hit the water, surfing to the docks, the crew bounded to their positions, led by Rian, lashing the ship to the pier as Hort dropped anchor. From the railing, Tedros and Agatha watched the knight gather his group on the east dock.
"My team, follow me,"
said Rian, leading Hester, Anadil, Beatrix, and Rena away in the rain, with Dot scurrying and sniffling behind.
Our turn,
said Tedros, taking Agatha's hand, about to summon his team. The king froze. Squinting over the railing, Agatha followed his eyes. There was a woman at the end of the west dock. She wore all white, her hair the same ghostly color wet from the rain.
The Lady of the Lake?
Agatha breathed as she and Tedros moved closer. Only now they could see the woman's face. Tedros squeezed Agatha's hand.
Take our group and go, he ordered.
Let me come with... Tedros kissed her gently.
Go. I'll see you inside.
Agatha nodded. She gathered Hort, Nicola, Kiko, Willem, and Bogdan and herded them down the east dock and into the castle. Tedros came off the ship alone and faced the woman in white. A key made of glass dangled from a chain around her neck.
The snake will have to kill me to get this key, said Guinevere. He won't touch Excalibur as long as I'm alive.
I'm sorry, mother,
Tedros rasped, trying to quell his emotion.
My hair changed color the moment I heard the news, said Guinevere. And yet, I haven't been able to cry.
He loved you so much,
said her son, his voice breaking.
In a way Dad never could. You were everything to Lance. He said it to me as he...
Guinevere pulled him into her arms. He loved you too, Tedros, like his own son, even if he wasn't always sure how to show it.
Why did he kill Lance? Why not me?
Tedros breathed, rain falling on his face.
Remember what Merlin said, his mother whispered. He wants to break you, to take away everything you love so you'll be too weak to fight back. But you have to fight back, Tedros. You have to stay strong. Both of us do.
She tilted his chin towards her. Tedros looked into his mother's fiery eyes.
We can't let that monster win,
said Guinevere. Tedros swept through the white tower, his crown back on his head, peering at a map of the castle grounds in one hand and a ledger accounting for all of Camelot's weapons in the other. He crossed through the staff dining hall, now turned into a war room, where Chef Silkemer and her cooks were filling giant barrels with cooking oil.
How many barrels, Silkemer?
Tedros asked without stopping.
64, sire. And they'll detonate easily? At first flame, sire.
The young king strode out of the hall and saw Hort in the corridor, helplessly surrounded by heaps of broken and rusted weapons. Maces, spears, axes, swords.
This is a holy mess, said Hort.
Which is why I wanted a Hort on my team to fix it, said Tedros.
Aye, aye, sir,
said Hort. Tedros veered into the next hall, where Kiko was standing with a beefy, shirtless guard amidst piles of mismatched pieces of armor that Kiko was trying to fit back together. Tedros raised his brows.
I told him that if I could watch him put the armor on, then maybe I'd see how it all goes, Kiko defended.
Tedros shoved past them and peeked into the steward's common room, where two maids were trying to repair a mound of splintered bows and arrows.
He glimpsed a few newspapers spread out on a table. On top was the Jean Joly journal.
King Tedros's crew bungles snake capture. Lancelot dead, snake on the loose.
Tedros flung it aside to see the latest Camelot courier.
Snake eyes Camelot. Is the lion our only hope?
Tedros lifted it up to see the royal rot underneath, a huge portrait of Rian and Sophie on its front page. Dreamy lion in love with Tedros's ex-flame? Tedros rolled his eyes, hurrying back into the hall. Agatha accosted him, Reaper at her heels.
Guinevere and I met with the treasury master. Good news is the leaders of our allied kingdoms are contributing weapons, armor, and men to our army. Bad news is they're only doing this on the condition that the lion lead that army instead of you, since A, he saved so many of their kingdoms from the snake, and B, they blame you for losing the snake last night, since Dot is your friend.
And is there a reason these leaders won't tell me this to my face?
Tedros asked, frowning.
When they found out the lion was in town, they went gaggling out of the castle to try and meet him. Dragged your mother with them.
Whatever, Tedros growled. Let them think Rian is leading the army. He's my knight. His loyalty is to me, not them.
How else can I help? Agatha pressed.
Check on Rian's team in Maker's Market. I'm worried the snake or his thugs will find their way in, especially if my mother's down there,
said Tedros.
If you see anything, shoot your glow into the sky. Don't try and fight them yourselves. Deal?
Deal, said Agatha, hurrying away.
Agatha?
She turned.
We are good in war, aren't we?
Said Tedros.
I'll ask Sophie if she can do a war-themed wedding then, said Agatha dryly.
They split in opposite directions, with Tedros heading down a hall, searching for the remainder of his team. He tripped over Willem and Bogdan, who were dealing tarot cards on the carpet.
You can't be serious,
Tedros said, scowling.
We're saving your kingdom. See? Look!
Bogdan peeped, holding up a five of wands.
Be wary of gifts.
If I'd known I'd get stuck with two astrology-obsessed monkeys, I would have put you on Rian's team. Tarot cards aren't astrology, said Willem. Where's Nicola?
Tedros asked, tempted to give both of them a beating.
She said she saw stars and was following them into the bathroom, said Bogdan.
Is this more astrology crap?
Tedros barked.
No, she literally found stars in the hallway and was following them into the bathroom next to Lady Grimlane's old room,
said Willem, his eyes still on the cards.
Definitely be wary of gifts.
Tedros had no clue what Willem was talking about, but he couldn't deal with these two nitwits anymore. Nor did he want a random first year hovering around his father's old guest room. He hastened through the second floor towards the bathroom. Tedros stopped short. A white star glowed on the carpet in front of him. Merlin's white star. Tedros lifted his eyes. More stars lined the hallway, leading up to the closed bathroom door. Tedros knocked on it.
Nicola?
No answer. He turned the knob.
Nicola, you in here?
The bathroom was empty. The opposing doors to Lady Gremlane's room and the guest room both shut. But the trail of stars continued, tracking right to the edge of the guest room door. Tedros pulled it open, revealing the dim, airless chamber. Nicola wasn't inside. More lit stars dotted the carpet like breadcrumbs, pointing to the bed in the corner. He followed them until he was standing over the mattress where a single star lay on top of its sheets, blinking with white light. Tedros waited for something to happen. The star kept flashing at him. Instinctively, the young king found himself climbing into the stiff bed and sliding under the stale beige sheets. Except the sheets felt oddly thicker than they looked, layered underneath with a heavy blanket that felt soft against Tedros's skin, made of some kind of wool, or velvet. Tedros's heart jumped. He yanked the blanket over his head, seeing the glint of silver-sewn stars in the darkness. The next thing he knew, he was falling. As he crawled across the cloud, he saw Merlin seated next to Nicola at its edge, framed against the purple sky, the wizard and first year sharing a chocolate chunk cookie. Nicola had Merlin's hat in her hand and was petting it like a dog, the hat purring softly under her palm.
"Yes, don't worry, Professor Dovey knows I'm alive," the wizard was telling her, "or she will soon at least. I've sent her a note ordering her to remain at school and let Tedros handle affairs at Camelot. After what happened to Lancelot, I don't want Clarissa to put herself in harm's way, especially when she isn't at her best." "Is she ill?" Tedros asked.
Merlin turned and saw the young king.
"No, she's not ill," said the wizard. "Nicola and I were having a nice chat. She happened to come across the trail I left for you, and being a clever little reader, she found her way to me first."
Merlin saw Tedros's blank expression.
"I'm assuming you two know each other?"
"Yeah," said Nicola.
"Not really," said Tedros at the same time. "I see," said Merlin. "Can we talk alone?"
Tedros pressed the wizard. "Don't mind me, I'm just on your team," said Nicola, standing up.
"Sorry if I don't have time for pleasantries. I'm trying to keep all of us alive,"
Tedros retorted.
"So am I, but whatever," the first year mumbled. "Everyone else is different in real life than they are in books, but you're pretty much spot on."
She returned the hat to the wizard.
"I'll see you soon, Merlin."
"How am I in books?"
said Tedros, frowning.
Nicola threw him a glance. "High-handed and over-emotional."
Merlin's hat whistled.
"Thanks in advance for that favor, Merlin," Nicola said. Cookie in hand, she cannonballed over the edge of the cloud and vanished into the purple night. Tedros settled next to Merlin, shoving the hat away.
"She wanted a favor?"
Tedros asked sourly.
"Suggested I check on a student's records from school,"
said the wizard.
"Rian's? Dovey already checked on Rian."
"No, not his. Nicola is a really sharp young girl. I can see why the Storian included her in your..."
"Lancelot is dead, Merlin,"
Tedros cut in, cheeks reddening.
"The snake is coming, war is coming, and you're sitting here on a cloud entertaining irrelevant favors from first years. Where have you been?"
"The answer to that question is always the same, my boy. I've been trying to help you. And when I leave at the close of this conversation, an exit to which you will no doubt take great offense, I hope you'll remember that."
"You're leaving? Now?"
"Whatever you think I should be doing, Tedros, please believe me when I say that whatever I am doing will prove far more beneficial to your future."
"Which is what, exactly?"
"I cannot tell you,"
said Merlin. Tedros let out a roar which resounded through the Celestium, then faded to silence.
I will not live forever, Tedros. There is still a bounty on my head, nor am I immortal or extending my life with leprechaun blood, regardless of what those peons at the Royal Rot write, said Merlin. My work with your father remains unfinished. I must carry it through with you until I am dead or the work is done.
When will the work be done? Tedros asked.
On the day I look to you for wisdom, instead of you looking to me, said Merlin.
Better invest in leprechaun blood, then, said Tedros.
I am well aware we are running out of time, said Merlin. You and me both. The snake is coming for you, and I'm afraid I have little to offer in the way of help.
Little. Not nothing, said Tedros, hopefully.
Indeed. On the way here, I stopped in Avalon to see the Lady of the Lake.
Tedros straightened.
Did she really give up her powers for the snake? Did she really kiss him?
She wouldn't see me, which makes me think she did, Merlin replied. She sent me a note through her waters, however, which said that if I promised to never return to her castle, I could ask her one and only one question, and she would answer it honestly. Since she was quite clear about not seeing me, I accepted her offer.
What did you ask her?
Whether Excalibur has a message for you, said the wizard.
That's what you asked the Lady of the Lake. Not what the snake's face looks like, or who he is, or how we beat him, or if he's really my father's son.
Tedros said, aggrieved. He stared at his mentor.
Well, what was her answer then? What was Excalibur's message?
Merlin pulled a crinkled scrap of paper from his robes and handed it to him. Tedros looked down at its light, ethereal script.
Unbury me. Rather cryptic. But at least it's something, Merlin sighed. The more I think about it, the less I...
He suddenly noticed Tedros's expression.
What is it?
My father. He said it in my dream,
said Tedros anxiously. The same message, unbury me. Merlin pulled at his beard.
Do you have any idea what it means?
Looking to me for wisdom already? You'll be sorely disappointed, said Tedros. What's strange, though, is both my father and Excalibur had the same message. It can't be literal, then. If I could unbury Excalibur from the stone, I would, and my father can't possibly want me digging up his grave. So there must be something that connects my father and the sword. Something hidden that I have to figure out.
And you must figure it out soon, Tedros,
Merlin pressured.
Your father and the Lady of the Lake are trying to help you. Unbury me. Those two words are the key. You must find out what they mean. Before it's too late.
But why more riddles?
Tedros asked, frustrated.
Why can't they just tell me?
Perhaps answering that riddle is as much a part of your coronation test as pulling the sword,
the wizard replied.
I'm assuming you haven't tried your hand at Excalibur since you've returned to the castle?
No. Not until the snake is dead. I won't feel like a king until then.
The wizard gazed